Wake up. Wake up call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, it is Friday. Thanks for joining us on Sports Map Radio. We got your weekend of football ready to go. Hey, we're going to give you our value thoughts on these games coming up in the program this morning. Also, good, the bad, and the dumb. But we're going to talk a lot about last night's game between Washington and the Giants, where Washington wins 30-29, kicking a last-second field goal. But there is so much to unpack in this game. You know, look, going into this, and this is what I do like about the NFL, is that you can have two teams that you're not really that high on. I mean, I know Washington made the playoffs at 7-9, but, you know, we're not exactly thinking that the NFC East team, even if it's Dallas, is one of the teams to watch out for. But you could still have a game that is mildly entertaining and, if not, actually kind of fun. This was one of those kind of games where it went back and forth. There were a lot of field goals kicked in this one, including the game winner. Giants had plenty of opportunities to win the game, couldn't close the deal. Tyler Heinicke played pretty well at times, threw a bad interception, but didn't have to pay for it. And overall, I mean, it was a pretty entertaining football game. But again, there is so much to dissect. We have got a lot of football left, but if you're Washington or the Giants, this game mattered a lot. It's a divisional matchup. You know how the division went last year. You never know with Dallas. They're already piling up on injuries. And even though, again, there's plenty of opportunities for the Giants to bounce back at 17 games, there's an extra playoff spot. These games matter. You know, I don't think you look at yourself and say, we're not a 13-win team. So when we have opportunities, especially on the road to win football games, we need to capitalize on it. We need to win these kind of games. These kind of games where we match up really well. And the Giants failed to do that, and Washington did. Losing Ryan Fitzpatrick, they go into Taylor Heinicke, who played last year in the playoffs, and he comes back and he does the thing that made him like a roller coaster type quarterback is best described. He will make the big play, but he tries to do a lot at the same time. So how did Washington pull this off? And we'll talk about the Giants' failures to capitalize on their opportunities and the play of Taylor Heinicke. We'll talk about that coming up next on Twitter at Tunity Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Good morning and a good Friday to you. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's dissect this Thursday night football game before we do. Hey, with Mako and their magic, your car's no longer tragic. If life throws you uh-ohs, just say better get Mako and head to Mako.com to get an online estimate today. All right, we could start in a number of places. Let's just start where the game was won, and that was Dustin Hopkins hitting a 43-yard field goal to win it after Dexter Lawrence was offsides on a 48-yard attempt that Hopkins missed. So I don't get this. This is and you're a kicker, Ron, so maybe you, if you're the Giants on defense and Hopkins was going for a 30-yard field goal, 27-yard field goal, right? Your job would be, we got to block this. The only chance we got is to block this.
Or just put pressure.
Right, just get him pressure.
Make him feel uncomfortable.
Right. He's a professional NFL kicker. He's probably going to nail that through the uprights. So it's a short kick. Let's get him. But a 48-yard kick? Wouldn't you just take your chances and say, the only thing we can't do is have a penalty to give him another chance?
Yeah.
The only thing we can do, let's take our chances that a 48-yard field goal, if he makes it, all right, he makes it, but he could miss it. But the only thing we can't do is move it 5 yards closer and give him another crack at it. And when coaches go, no one's to blame here, no one is to blame, plenty of blame to go around, do you think he goes, No, it's Dexter Lawrence's fault.
Game was won.
We won the game. And that guy should never have been offsides. Not in that situation, a 48-yard field goal. Why was he offsides?
Yeah.
A dummy.
If he wasn't offsides, Daniel Jones is looking at a 7-game winning streak.
I know, right? And he goes offsides. And you're a kicker. I got to think you thought he's nailing this one. He already had a shot at it.
Yeah.
He's closer. And now he's like, oh, I tugged that a little. I ain't tugging this one again or whatever it is. I pushed it, pulled it. Whatever, he just makes adjustments and nails it.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that it was still that much to the right.
Yeah, oh yeah, then it was coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought he missed it the second time.
Yeah, you're looking at it like, oh, is that going to drift again? But the thing is, you don't want to sit there and it's like, well, I don't want to pull it too much.
No.
Because then you're going to overcompensate.
It's like if you give a professional golfer a redo on a 10-foot putt, he'll probably make it 90% of the time.
Yeah.
If he has one shot at it and he goes, oh, that curls to the left, he'll nail it the second time. You don't do that with kickers. If you give a kicker misses a field goal and then you go, oh, try again, and this time closer, he's probably going to make it. Yeah, I mean, I know there's been cases where guys have missed too, but he's probably going to make it. Well, I said before this game, and I said this week, that it's about time the Giants figure out exactly who they have in Daniel Jones. So if I'm going to rip him because he turns the ball over a lot, I'm going to praise him when he has a game like that. It's 22 of 32. He was their team's leading rusher with 95 yards.
I fully believe that's not a good thing.
That ain't a good thing. No, that's
not for him. I, you know,
not, for him, not for the team. For him, yes. For the team,
for him,
no.
Yeah. But a Lamar Jackson, tell me your rushing quarterbacks, even Pat Mahomes. I'm okay with that because it's part of their makeup. You know, you have a dynamic runner behind you who can scramble, who can get those yards. I don't look at Daniel Jones as a runner.
He had like a 54-yard touchdown called back. How do you let a quarterback run 54 yards for a touchdown?
I don't think he has lights out speed.
No, I mean, he had another one that was 46. Like, he had 95 yards rushing on 9 carries. That's a first down every time the quarterback runs the ball.
And I think that.
How did Washington let this happen?
And I think that really the big issue for me is you have a second overall pick who, I mean, I know he's getting over a knee injury, but is there something more to it?
Yeah, right.
Because we've seen players. I'll use Adrian Peterson, for example. When Adrian Peterson came back, he wasn't on a pitch count. He came out flying right out of the gate after when he returned from his knee injury.
Sure.
And, I mean, Saquon Barkley's supposed to be the same type of runner, right?
Yeah. At least 13 carries, 57 yards on the day for Saquon Barkley. But look, Jones takes advantage of his deep threats, right? Because he's got the defense in the back, so he can get by the initial rush that's coming at him, he's going to pick up some real estate. But 46 or 56, what was it, 54 yards for the touchdown was called back for the holding.
Yeah,
and then he had a 46-yard run. Like, that's a lot of yardage for a quarterback to just gain. Once he passes the line of scrimmage, it's fair game on the quarterback. Everybody should be on him. He can't throw it anymore, and he's running for a touchdown. But he had a good game. He made big throws. Now, the one throw that he made to the end zone to Darius Slayton, now this was iffy to me. Everyone is saying Slayton dropped the ball. Now, he kind of did. He touched it. He dropped it. But that looked a little overthrown to me, just a touch. Like, it's borderline, I know, but he's in the end zone. Here's the thing, though. He's all alone. He's not fighting off a defender. He was wide open to make that catch, and he did get a hand on it, and he dropped it. But I thought it was a little extended, just a little too extended, but that was just me. So I'm going to blame both of those guys because he should have probably got it in, and Jones probably overthrew it just a touch. But nevertheless, you can't blow a... Like, I love the crowd shots because there were a lot of Giants fans in the stadium last night. And if you watch the slow-mo replay of that drop, you see like a couple of Giant fans in the crowd in the front rows jumping up excited because he's wide open. And then they just go, oh, you can't drop that pass. You've got to capitalize on that. But on the flip side of it, Taylor Heinicke, he had some big plays as well. He let him down on a touchdown drive that took 17 seconds in two plays. But he also threw that interception that the Giants could have converted into points, instead settled for a field goal that gave him the lead, which Washington then took back on the 43-yard field goal. I like Taylor Heinicke. I thought he was exciting. 336 through the air, had some big plays.
I thought he played well.
He did. He played really well. He played really well. And this is the thing that I'm kind of curious about. I felt like he played well in the playoff game against Tampa. Now, I know if you can get a journeyman quarterback like Ryan Fitzpatrick into the team, a little bit more veteran, I get it. But did they not see anything in Taylor Heinicke that made it, like, did he lose the battle in camp or something? Like, why wouldn't you just go, hey, this kid is worth developing as a starting quarterback? He really showed some moxie in that game against Tampa in the playoffs last year. And then last night, I'm like, he's just picking up where he left off. The last time we saw Taylor Heinicke, he was doing these kind of things. So, I don't know. Washington may have their quarterback. You know?
I thought so, too. I mean, he definitely deserves a legit shot.
Yeah, that's like, what I mean.
Like one of these situations where when Ryan Fitzpatrick's healthy, he doesn't just step aside and go, there you go, Ryan.
Yeah.
You know, Taylor might be the guy, and that's unfortunate for Fitzpatrick.
Well, like I said at the top of the hour, this is one of those games where, both of these teams and the coaches feel like they can win every week. I get that. But I think there is a moment where you go, look, there are games on this calendar we match up really well against. Like, these are good. You know, you got to win these kind of games. If you're the Giants, you're going to lose plenty of games this year. These are the kind of games you need to win. Like, it's in your control. Win it, right? It's really too bad because, again, it's just one guy. One guy's offsides call, and it closed the deal. And listen, I've said many times, you know, we point this out all the time. It is a fallacy if you go into a game where a field goal is missed in the second quarter or a touchdown is dropped in the third quarter and that team loses by that point, you know, 3 points or 7 points, whatever. And you say, well, if he had caught that or if he had made that field goal, they would have won, because you don't know how the game will progress. Decisions are made based on time and score and all of those things. So you don't know how the other team would react being down 4 instead of up 3, right? In this situation, though, this mistake, take it off the board, and the Giants win the football game. There's no other answer. This costs them the game. A lot of times we say that with something that went on at some point in the game, but this was the reason the Giants lost. This guy made that mistake on that play, a mistake they should not have made. Now, let's remind ourselves. Remember when Joe Judge had problems with a sloppy practice where it got out of hand and chippy, and he made them run until they were puking in training camp? What does he do with this team now that made these? Look, it wasn't just that penalty. They had 11 penalties in the game. 11 in the game. That's not disciplined football at all. So good for Washington. That was a nice win. Giants should have won it. Made a huge mistake. One guy made a huge mistake, but their quarterback played decent. I can't fault him for that. I have some other problems with Daniel Jones. He does turn the ball over a lot, but he didn't turn the ball over here. He threw for 249. He ran for 95. He did have a rushing score. He threw a touchdown pass to Darius Slayton. And that's the story of Daniel Jones in this game. So I got to give him props. Played pretty well.
But do you get the feeling that the Giants are going to be that team that plays well in games but just can't finish it?
One thing that was absolutely lacking was a pass rush. They did not get to Taylor Heinicke at all. They sacked him once. They never pressured him. Never pressured him. And that's something I saw the Giants do last year. You know, that they seem to regress a touch. I don't know if it's just this game or it's going to be a trend all season. We were really impressed with the Giants' defense last year. It kind of kept them in games when Daniel Jones was, you know, puking on himself with turnovers. It kept them in ball games. Last night, I wasn't impressed, and I don't think they really didn't get to Heinicke at all. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. We'll talk more about this game coming up, and we'll get into week two of the National Football League. We'll also get into the college games because it's starting to heat up a little bit, these matchups, especially ones in the conference play, as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue along. It is Wake Up Call here on your Friday. Got the good, the bad, the dumb coming up in hour number two. And then in hour three, we're going to go over all the games in the NFL for week two. We don't tell you who we think is going to win, but we tell you why it's worth your time, if it is at all. Are your wiper blades chattering, skipping, or squeaking? Don't compromise your visibility with streaks or smearing on your windows when it's time to replace your wiper blades. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts. The professional parts people will help you navigate their wide selection to find just the right wiper blades for your vehicle. O'Reilly Auto Parts will even install your wiper blades free of charge. See better and drive safer with new wiper blades at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. All right, one college note. Earlier this week, I think it happened on Monday, if I'm not mistaken. It was that quick. Clay Helton was fired as the head coach at USC.
Yeah, I remember that.
Wasn't it Monday or Tuesday? It was Monday, right?
I think it was Monday.
I think it happened pretty immediately after they lost to Stanford over the weekend.
But he got on the plane.
Yeah,
well,
he
actually,
did.
They were at home.
They actually had a professional departure of ways rather than go here. Before we leave here, let's just hash this out right here and now.
He didn't get the tarmac treatment?
No, he didn't get the tarmac treatment. So there's been a lot of speculation this week of who's going to take that job. And Urban Meyer was asked about it, of course. And, you know, and Eric Bieniemy, who's the offensive coordinator of the Kansas City Chiefs, he was asked about it as well. And he said, oh, no, I'm concentrating on the Chiefs. I know we have to ask. I said this before. Part of journalism is to get an answer, even to questions that have obvious answers. Yeah, I always try to teach you guys about why dumb questions get asked when people go, why is he asking that question? It's so obvious. Because as a journalist, as a reporter, you want the person to say that. Like, you as a journalist are not, unless you're an opinion columnist, you're not supposed to interject your thoughts or opinions into a who, what, where, when, and why piece. So you get the subject to explain what happened, even though you know what happened. So that's kind of why you hear that. So you got to get it kind of on the record. So it's what, so when a reporter goes to Urban Meyer and says, or Eric Bieniemy, or anybody, take any coach that's out there, James Franklin, anybody out there right now who is going to be asked about the job, they know they're going to get the, no, nothing better than where I am right now. Where I am right now is where I want to be. They all are going to say that, but you want it on the record that they said that, rather than saying, well, speculation is he's not going to think about the job at this time. You have to get them to say it. So that's exactly what Eric Bieniemy said. No, my focus is going to be on the Kansas City Chiefs. Like Urban Meyer said, no, my focus, I'm here, no chance, I'm going to USC. The problem is, and again, is I understand why these questions get asked, but it does not mean that has to be taken as gospel. That's what I do not understand. I don't understand the second part. We talked about this about Joe Judge, right? After the game, Joe Judge said no one was to blame for the Giants' loss. Okay, that's coach speak. You win as a team, you lose as a team. There were drop passes. There were defensive lapses. There was 10 other penalties besides Dexter Lawrence. But in the end, it was Dexter Lawrence that cost them the game. But he's not going to say that. He's not going to say that because throwing a player under the bus like that is a bad look for a head coach. It doesn't go well in free agency when you're trying to get players to sign there. And two, we don't even know. Like, what if Dexter Lawrence is a cool dude? Like, what if he's a good guy? What if they have a good relationship? What if he's the last one out of meetings? First one on the practice field. He got to know his wife. He got to know his kids. If he has a wife and kids. Like, if he got to know his family. Like, he wouldn't do that to someone he cares about. I think we've all worked at places, whether it's radio stations like Ron and I have, or whatever business you're at, where there was somebody within the company that made a mistake, but he's likable or she's really likable. And you're like, you can't stay mad at them forever because they're just nice people. They're good to be around. They work extra hard. It was just an error. Maybe Dexter Lawrence is that kind of guy. But when he says that, We honestly don't know if behind the doors he's like, oh, Dexter, man, God, cost us the game. Like with his other coaches in the locker room behind closed doors. The same thing applies to these coaches when it comes to the USC job. The USC job is a phenomenal job. It is a phenomenal job. I'll be honest with you. I remember when Lane Kiffin got it. I was like, man, really? That's a great gig. It's LA. It's Pac-12 football. Great recruiting base. It's the Trojans. It's one of the premier college football teams in the history of the sport. Right? It's a great gig. If you're at any, if you're doing anything, no matter where you are, there's a good chance that the USC job is better than what you're currently doing. I think it's even better than the Penn State gig. I think the Penn State gig is fantastic, but I think it's better than the Penn State gig. I think it's definitely better than the Jacksonville Jaguars gig, even though it's one of 32 team, 32 coaches. It's absolutely better than the offensive coordinator job at Kansas City, even though you're working with Patrick Mahomes, because what you are there is an offensive coordinator when you want to be a head coach and the NFL didn't even bring you in for many interviews last year or offer you a job. If you can go from the offensive coordinator at Kansas City, even working with Patrick Mahomes and that fantastic offense and a chance to win more Super Bowls, and you have a chance to parlay that into the USC coaching gig, take the USC coaching gig. But none of these guys are ever going to admit it because that's not how that works. It just doesn't work that way. When people go, Nick Saban lied to us back when he was, what was he supposed to do at that moment? Tell you he was going to take the Alabama job? Like it hadn't been done yet. What was he supposed to do? Go, yeah, guys, I'm expecting any day now to get a call from my agent. I'm going to be out of here. So I'll just put everybody on notice. We're working out the finer details. When it's done, I'm leaving the Dolphins. I'm out of here. I'll be the head coach at Alabama. No, of course not. There is a level of sort of acceptable lying when it comes to this. Because the sin of lying will outweigh the honor of telling the truth in those situations. Because telling the truth in those situations is going to cause you more problems than you know what to do with. Rather than just let this play out the way it's supposed to play out. You're Urban Meyer. Let's take Urban Meyer, for example. Let's say right now he's really interested in USC. Really interested. How, if you asked him and he said, oh, absolutely. Absolutely. My agent and is working on it right now. I don't know if it'll happen, but man, the first chance I get to be a head coach at a place like USC, I'm running. How do you, you're getting called into the owner's office the next second you're done. What is this nonsense? We just signed you to a contract, paying you a lot of money. What do you mean you're interested in the USC job? No, you let it play out behind the scenes. And then when they go, well, why didn't you tell? Of course, because he didn't have to tell you. He told you at the time what he needed to tell you. So I love these denial stories because I know that they're coming, but I also love how a lot of people in the media are like, well, that's done. Who else can they go after? Like, what do you mean that's done? Because they said it's done? Like, if Urban Meyer is on the podium and says, I'm not going to be the head coach at USC, or James Franklin says, I love it here at Penn State, or Eric Bieniemy goes, nope, I'm staying in the National Football League. Do you think USC is like, well, there's our answer. We don't even have to ask now. I guess we don't have to call their agents and see if they're interested. They've already told the local media of that particular team and the fan base of that particular team they're not coming here.
That'd be awesome, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't it?
he said no.
Yeah. Sorry. Is there anybody willing to take a gamble and say yes at their local press conference where they're getting ready for a game this Saturday? Right? Chris Peterson, are you interested in the USC job? How about you, Billy Napier?
I love, they announced that they're hiring FBI guys. Like, read his body language.
Right, yeah,
is he
right.
really saying no, or is that a yes?
Yeah, somebody actually did that with Urban Meyer. They're like, he leaned back and put his hands in the part in
yeah.
his pocket.
Wasn't making eye contact.
Yeah, right? Reading. Yeah, that's funny. The body language experts from the FBI are breaking down film footage.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. We got Good, the Bad, and the Dub coming up in hour number two. We also are trying to track down my good friend Dave Preston, WTOP. We'll talk a little Washington with him if he gets back to us. It was just one of those things where I was like, yeah, maybe we should find out about Taylor Heinicke. I keep calling him Heinicke, but it's Heinicke. I'm never going to get it right.
I mean, there's a marketing ploy here.
I know.
He needs to start hawking Heineken.
It certainly is.
He needs to be the face of Heineken. And Heineken, yeah. You're doing yourself a disservice if you don't grab him immediately. Because you can get him on the cheap right now. That's why.
That's true. Yeah, but here's the thing. It's like with other quarterbacks who have weird, I wouldn't say his pronunciation is off. It's not like Tua Tagovailoa. But I thought I'd never get that. And after a while, you get it. It just comes.
Yeah.
After a while.
But you know what? Giannis's last name will still always be hard.
Yeah. Oh, I know. We talked about this one time before where Giannis's last name, Adetokounmpo, is actually Adetokounmpo because there's a way the Greek vowels make it. There's a B to it.
Yeah.
And I remember there was a story. Ryan Rucco, who does ESPN basketball, he also is like Yankees. He's a New York guy, and he does play-by-play for ESPN. But he was doing a Milwaukee game kind of early in Giannis's career, and he wanted to really make sure he nailed it. And so he really went after the pronunciation and made sure that he got it correct. And he got it Adetokounmpo with a B because of the way the letters in Greek are actually pronounced rather than sort of the more Englishized version of it. And he claims, he goes, I nailed it. He talked to everybody, including Giannis, but nobody uses that pronunciation in the mainstream media. Everybody says Adetokounmpo, using the P because that's the way it is. So it goes. It's weird because it's you'd think there'd be one way to do it, but there isn't one way to do it. So I thought Hard Knocks was going to disappear last night. I thought that was going to be the big announcement that it was over. That they were going to say, hey, thanks to the Dallas Cowboys, our last participant. It's been a great run. We are glad that it is. It's been in the books. It's been a long time running, and we are glad all the teams have participated. Thank you. But no, that wasn't the announcement yesterday. The announcement is that the Indianapolis Colts will be on the Hard Knocks regular season edition of the show. So it's the first time that they're going to follow a team during the regular season. I got to tell you something. If I'm on the Colts, I want nothing to do with this nonsense. It's one thing you want to follow us around in camp. You're not following me around during the regular season. Are you crazy? I'm not having this. I don't know what they're going to be. Imagine a whole year with cameras on you the entire season. Tell me they're not doing this for 17 weeks.
I hope not.
I think it's a terrible idea.
If you're going to do it, you should do it like with a team that can handle the distractions right now.
I don't believe
that team can handle distractions.
I do not know what the players or the teams get with this. Like, do they get a little money? I don't know.
Free HBO for the year?
Free HBO. But if I'm on the Colts right now, I'd be livid. I'm like, no. I'm not doing this. I'm not having a camera follow me. Listen, last night was a perfect example of it, right? Kenny Galloway got in a shouting match with Daniel Jones on the sidelines. Nobody really knows why. Joe Judge said afterwards in the locker room, they were hugging. They were fine. Just something that happens. You know how reality shows work. You give them an inch, they take 7,200 miles. That's all they need. They need one thing, and then they blow it up into something that's way bigger than it actually was. And I would not want that. Look, if I'm on a football team, I know how Hard Knocks works. Okay, so if I'm a veteran, I'm on the Dallas Cowboys, I'm Dak Prescott. And Prescott was featured a lot in the Hard Knocks this summer. But I know how this works. I know the formula. Show me doing some stuff. J.J. Watt knew the formula. Remember they talked about J.J. Watt showing, like, throwing tires around late at night for the cameras? He knew how it worked.
Yeah.
right? Veterans who are looking to, you know, there's a vehicle here for me to market myself even more than I'm already marketed. I'm going to take advantage of those cameras. Okay, fine. But the formula for Hard Knocks in the preseason, and we said this many times, they take a team, they talk about its struggles, they talk about their expectations, they take a few veterans, then they find four or five guys that are trying to make the team, and they highlight them. They give you the background of them. They talk about their families. They talk about their upbringing. They talk about their love for football. They talk about how hard it is to get on this team and if they'll make it, so that you have a vested interest in finding out if they, at the end, will either make the team or not. Now, one of the criticisms of Hard Knocks over the years, and it actually was probably the main reason to watch, was when guys got cut. You know, they'd be, hey, coach wants to see you. And they knew why. Bring your playbook. Blah. They get cut. But because there were never any fireworks, it was actually kind of boring. And to be honest with you, kind of sad. Because you felt like you were eavesdropping in on a conversation you shouldn't be eavesdropping on. It was supposed to be kind of private. Guy's losing out on a dream. He's got to leave the building. He's trying to hope that his dream continues, but he doesn't know for sure. He's getting told all these great things about him, but it's still a hard thing to take when you're trying to make an NFL team and you don't make the NFL team. They actually did away with that. What are they going to do during the regular season that would make me as a player interested in them following me around with a camera all the time? I mean, there's a lot of things that happen in a locker room that are over quick. You talk about 53 guys all fighting, you know, to win games, and there's going to be, you know, contention. There's going to be anger. There's going to be some, you know, some blows a little bit, not maybe physically, but emotionally. And do you want cameras in the locker room all season long, taking every little thing back to the production room going, oh, we got something. Offensive tackle Joe Smith and defensive end Mark Jones hate each other. Let's get with that angle. You know, I wouldn't want to be a part of this at all. Now, would I be interested as a fan in seeing this? I guess so. With the Colts, yeah. There's a lot of things about the Colts I'm interested in. As a player, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I wonder if this has to be cleared by the Players Association. It probably doesn't. I think the NFL could just do it.
Yeah. I think that's, like, you know, one of those little bylines that nobody reads.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, exactly.
Like down in the bottom corner and say, oh, we can cover your team full season anytime we want.
It's like, are we getting a cut of this? No. Do I get a little money for you filming my everyday life? No.
I mean, maybe it is just free HBO for you and your family.
Maybe it is.
Up to 10 accounts.
Yeah. But look, I've mentioned the Netflix Drive to Survive series for Formula One. They do that too. They'll take a driver, spat, blow it up. Of course they do. It's what a reality show does.
Well, I mean, you know
It's the nature of that industry.
Let's be real. I mean, there's cameras following these teams around all season long. I mean, how do you think we got The Last Dance?
Right.
You know, so, I mean, maybe it's just they're used to having cameras there, but it's not shown weekly. And that's, I don't want to say racing's different than the NFL, but I think there's a lot more moving parts with the NFL.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, too, in a series, like Netflix is going to do a PGA Tour series very similar to Drive to Survive. In Drive to Survive, there's 10 Formula One teams, and they pick a team for the weekend. And they say, this weekend we're following Alpine, or we're following Mercedes, or we're following Ferrari. And then they do their thing on that, and that's it. This is the Colts every single week, every single day. Like, they're not going to bounce around to all 32 teams.
Yeah.
They're not going to say, hey, Colts, you're playing New England this week, and we're gonna follow you around. And then next week they go, Steelers, that big game against Cleveland coming up, we're going to follow you around. And then we're going to move our camera crew out west, and then we're going to move our crew to Seattle. They're going to follow the Colts every single week. So for 17 weeks, every day, there's cameras. That is creating a weekly narrative on you and your team and what it is. And because it's coming out weekly, then you may have if you're a center and you get in a fight with the offensive tackle and they make this out to be a huge deal, you do have an opportunity to tell the press, hey, that was nothing. We were just, you know, it was heat of the moment kind of stuff. But I don't know. I really did think the announcements it was over. I didn't know we're stepping up our game.
Liv Schreiber's going to have to find a new job.
Oh, my God. He's never going to have time to act now. Yeah, God there's not a Wolverine movie coming out. Or is there another season of Ray Donovan that he has to do? He's never going to have any free time. Hope they locked him in for 17 long weeks. Poor guy's going to have to turn scripts down. Hey, we got a great script from... I can't do it.
Yep,
Steven Spielberg. Nope. Can't do it. Why? Because I have to narrate the Colts documentary on HBO.
Yes, but Liv, there's Oscar buzz just around the script.
This script has been written by five of the greatest scriptwriters of our time. It's going to be directed by Steven Spielberg and Francis Ford Coppola. You can't turn this down. No.
No.
This is the week Carson Wentz gets the flu.
Because he didn't get the shot.
Because he didn't get the shot. So I have to stay here and do that. Poor Liev Schreiber. Oh, it stinks.
God, how many hours is he just going to... He's going to finish, like, you know, an 18-hour workday on set someplace.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like, yeah, hey, we need you to run, you know, read a couple pages.
He's going to read it all bitterly, too. Like, before, he'd be like...
Hey, this Hard Knocks might be great, then.
Exactly. Instead of that normal Liev Schreiber way, he'll be like, the Colts are preparing for the New England Patriots. They're 1-1 on the season, and there's a lot of problems on the offensive line. The running game isn't there, and Carson Wentz can't play very well. Bye. Is something wrong? No, everything's fine. I'll be back tomorrow to finish this stupid thing.
Can you give us one more take?
Yeah.
No.
No.
Get out of here.
Meanwhile, all of his actor friends are taking that role and be like, this is the greatest thing that's ever happened to me.
Then we learn about it years later. Yeah, roles that were turned down that became Oscar winners.
Oh, right,
you hear
exactly.
It all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, Liev Schreiber was offered this one and this one and this one. But no, he stuck to the Colts.
Yeah, won 17 Oscars, and he had to turn it down to do Colts briefs every week. He's going to be like Michael Caine doing Jaws the Revenge.
Yes.
When he won Best Actor. Liev Schreiber. Oh, man, that's funny. All right, on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two heads as we continue with the Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. Some good matchups in college football coming up tomorrow. We got Auburn at Penn State. Whiteout at Happy Valley. That is always, I don't know, that's kind of intimidating because everybody does it. Like, there's no, like, place in the stadium that you don't see the whiteout. I remember years ago...
Except that one corner
that
of
one
Auburn
little corner,
fans.
Yeah, of Auburn fans that show up. I remember years ago... This is probably one of the more embarrassing moments of South Carolina football history. Years ago, South Carolina was playing Florida. Steve Spurrier, Florida. All right, not the latest, you know, Urban Meyer, Ron Zook, Florida. The good Florida teams. Oh, by the way, Urban Meyer's teams were good. I get it. But South Carolina... was playing pretty good. I think Lou Holtz was the coach at the time. And they were playing pretty good. They had Phil Petty at quarterback, and they were winning some games. And so it was a big game, and they said, we're going to have a blackout. So everybody wear black. It's going to be a blackout. And Florida won the game like 59-7 or something like that. And at the end of the game, Spurrier had the audacity in a press conference to say, I want to thank everybody at South Carolina for wearing black tonight. Our wide receivers certainly saw the ball a lot better this evening because of it. And I was just like, really, man? Really? And he literally called out the blackout. So if I'm Auburn, that's what I would do if I won the game handedly over Penn State. I'd say, thanks, everybody wearing white. Our running backs and wide receivers played better because of it. I don't know. Something along those lines. So it's going to be intimidating. Florida is actually taking on Alabama this weekend in the Swamp. They don't play very often in terms of like the regular season matchup because the way the SEC works, and I know it's going to be a little different, that you usually get a cross-division rival. And because for Alabama, that cross-division rival every year is Tennessee, third Saturday in October. And so they never get to play. They really don't play Florida a lot, but they are this year. And they've only played, so they only play a handful of times. Alabama has not been to Florida since 2011. That is 10 years. But they've beaten the Gators seven straight times, including last year in the SEC championship game. So the Gators will use a two-quarterback system with Emory Jones and Anthony Richardson. But I don't think it's going to matter. I think Alabama's going to win that game. You know what I was thinking about with Alabama? Because people are like, you know, here's another year, how good they are. I want somebody's thought. I might have to ask somebody about that. Maybe I'll ask Jerry Palm about this next week. Because of the new name, image, and likeness, does name, image, and likeness help Alabama in the future, or does it hurt Alabama in the future?
Ooh.
Because here's the way you get it. If you're a star at Alabama, you're going to make money. But not everybody can play at Alabama, right? They've got like 5 stars on the bench. So if you're a 5-star player, would you go, you know, here's the deal, coach. I would love to play for you. I would love to play at Alabama because you get guys to the NFL. But I don't think I could start right away. And I know I can start right away at Kentucky. And that's where I'm going to go because I can maximize my name, image, and likeness. Because if I go to you, I may learn from some guys, my upperclassmen that, you know, that are going to be, you know, influential in the defense. So when I take it over as a junior, but I want to play right away. And if I play right away, I got 7 figures coming to me. Like there's 2 ways you can look at that, right? Because you know kids at Alabama are going to get paid if you play. But if you don't play and you can play somewhere else, wouldn't you just go somewhere else? So that's kind of a thought I've had about Alabama football. Coming up, we got Dave Preston, WTOP, to talk about Washington's win last night. And, of course, the good, the bad, and the dumb. It's all coming up Hour 2 on a Friday on Sports Map Radio.